We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
The great Gavin Walker himself and The Jazz Show. I'm David Love Jones, and this is the Soul, Funk, Jazz, and Latin Show, I guess you would call it. And we got a couple of regular guests back from Philly and New York City. Michael Ingram.
Good evening, everybody. What's up, Vancouver?
And Jason Hoover, the man we are making a film about, local soul funk history. Welcome, Jason.
Well, thank you very much, David. Thank you. I appreciate you bringing me on your show again. It's just nice to see Mike Hewitt from Philly. It's nice to see Mike. And we also have Kirk
Moses, the editor of The Trials of Jason Hoover. And
hello.
That's been going on for a little while now, right, Kirk?
Yes.
We're going to see this film through this holiday season.
Yes, we're looking to try to have a cut of something by Christmas for sure. Definitely
yeah.
A trailer and some.
I think it's going to look a lot better by then. Like, we're going to weave out of this film a story and local history and Jason's journey, which is a pretty fascinating journey, all in all.
Yeah, there's a lot of facets to it. There's some Canadian history, there's some black. Psychology and melodrama and I think there's a very deep story here.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's get the music rolling and so we can get into the groove. And we're going to drop, of course, a little bit of Jason Hoover's local music that he made here between recorded music would have been between 67 and I guess the 80s. The beginning would be the Live at the Grooveyard would have been the first time the epics were recorded. Mm. But I suppose you can look at the live CBC shows as historical documents themselves. You know, being he's doing songs he never recorded, George Clinton and Funky Broadway.
And plus the fact that they asked him to do this. So obviously they saw something in Jason that prompted them to go and do something like this where he'd get national exposure.
Yeah, so we're going to go into that a little bit more, how Jason was nationally televised back in the 60s here on local television, part of the CBC. But we're going to start with a great ballad I want to play for you, Jason. Check this out. Just found out. I played this for Mike before, but check this out, Jason.
More than you'll ever know.
Freddie Hughes, pretty meaningful moments in deep soul music. I would guess late 60s.
Yeah. Actually, I'd say mid 60s, but
yeah, mid to late.
Deconstructed gospel, because you could have took those same lyrics and made a gospel song out of it.
Right.
So it was all a matter of which person you were singing in, if you're making that direct reference to God or whatever.
Yeah.
The arrangement, what matters. The sisters in the background.
Yeah.
You got the ear.
The very gospel.
Out, all that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, that was pretty fantastically put together, hey, Jason?
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable, yes. The Baptist Church really put an effect on this man.
Yeah, no, great. I mean, when you talk about Aretha and stuff like that, you really see, and then when I saw Sammy Davis Jr. talking about Aretha and how a lot of black people grow up in the Baptist church and they just get exposed to that gospel and whatever. So, you know, it ends up, whatever kind of music they're doing, it ends up having an effect.
You know? And you got to have people that trust the process in order to allow a program director to play something like that. You know, you might hear something like that deep south, like in the Carolinas or Mississippi or thereabouts, but they won't play something like that in a major market up east, like Philadelphia or Baltimore or New York City.
It's too good for the masses, yeah. Stuff like that. You know, but Jerry Ragavoy, I don't remember what other songs he wrote.
Stay With Me.
Stay With Me, Lorraine Ellison, right.
Stay With Me, Stay With Me, and Stay With Me. Best thing he ever did.
So, I mean, when Jason and Jack Hirsch and his manager or whoever decided to do this Baby, I Love You track on the B-side, how do you think it came about, Jason?
It was all about me. I just, you know, I loved the song. It was already written and already been recorded, but nobody knew it in Canada. So I said, well, listen, I really love this song. It keeps going in my brain from one end to the, you know.
Where did you hear it?
KYAC.
Hmm.
And that was the Seattle radio. It was Seattle R&B.
So he heard somebody else singing it, I guess. And decided he wanted to cover it.
Sponged it up.
I needed a real powerful, you know, B-side for King Size. I knew King Size would probably do all right, but I wanted something. And at that point in time, it was about dance music. It wasn't really disco. People wanted to call it disco. Mm-hmm. It was dance music. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were doing the Hully Gully and everything else. You know.
This was still only 68. So,
yeah, the jerk was happening then too, man.
That's right.
That's much more 60s. I mean, this advent of, say, the early disco, which would have been, of course, Philly International, wasn't really happening until about 72.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know. So in 68, things were pretty different. And it was also the tail end of even the fertile Vancouver R&B scene. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, at one time we did have a lot of things, you know, a lot of acts. Night Train Review was the most popular. Matter of fact, we were definitely number two. And there was a point when they were so good, we were hired for Hawaii.
But that was later, though.
Yeah. That was a two-year... Well,
no, that was early
70s. Early 70s, 72, 71.
Yeah. So that was quite a bit later.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's get back to the single, though, Baby, I Love You, and then let's just drop that anyway.
Okay.
The Trials of Jason Hoover. Baby, I Love You, debut single, B-side. Thank you.
first one I won't do. Yes, I.
How does it sound all these years later? I mean, that's from 50 years ago, Jason.
Isn't that something? 50 years ago, I'm still alive. it was really good. I'm close as I can be right now.
Okay.
I'll eat the mother in a minute. It was really funny. During that time period, I didn't really know what was happening. All I wanted to do was sing and make records. And that was all that was on my mind.
Were you happy with how that one worked out?
Yeah, I was.
For a B-side?
Yeah, for a B-side, really. Really, I was. And when we were in Portland, it really hit the charts of dance. You know, all the jukeboxes had them. It was really nice to, you know, go into Portland, Oregon, and go to all the clubs on the strip. And there you see it. King size and Baby, I Love You. You know?
So Portland and Seattle picked up on the 1968 single,
yeah.
King Size and Baby, I Love You.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they liked it.
They liked it.
Seattle radio?
And Portland. You keep forgetting mm-hmm. Portland. Now, Portland is another 700 miles from Vancouver.
You had a residency in Portland mm-hmm. In that first year of the trials.
Mm-hmm. We were there for 3 months, and we had a place to stay, a place to party. It was really well done. Jack made sure that everything was perfect for us, and it worked out.
So Jack Hersham was still handling you at that time. But
yeah, but it was the last of it.
He was to have some bad luck shortly after that as being an investor into the future Mushroom Studios. it wasn't called that then. It was Studio 3 or something?
Aragon Studio.
Yeah. And they messed him around.
He likes to let people know that. He put his whole life and actually put all of his funds he had up here in Canada into Aragon Studios.
He definitely went a different route for a guy in the entertainment business. He got kind of spiritual. He got into some other things, went to California. Mm-hmm. He's an interesting guy. Yeah, he's different.
You could write a book about Jack. Yeah. And you know, when we were negotiating with the guess who they were managing, they were going to manage me after Jack left because he didn't want to leave me in bad hands. So he dropped me off with the guess who, and they became my management, and it was like wonderful. I mean, when I saw Don Hunter and Jack Hersham shaking hands, it was like, wow, where's the cameras? You know, because they were both heavy people.
It seems that your history career of playing soul and funk certainly also includes rock. So the way you dabbled with rock, I think, is one of the unique parts of the story, eh, Mike?
No question, because just like Sly did, as he was running that tightrope between funk, rock, and soul, you were doing the same thing. And it was parallel. This wasn't like, oh, I like this guy, so I'm going to sound like him.
No.
And that's what I think the listeners need to understand. Mm-hmm. You had original music coming from a source right here in Vancouver, not Toronto.
No.
You know, not in any other big markets and whatnot. And Toronto, even when they tried to do this, they didn't have anything like you. So we were working with, if I'm an exec at a radio station in Canada anywhere, what am I thinking? You know, if I'm in Toronto, I'm stuck because, well, there's nothing out there for me. If I'm in the middle of the country, I've got Motown right there. So the station in Windsor, which had that 50,000-watt signal, they're pimping off of Motown and putting those acts on air. Nothing out west even came close to this, and you didn't have anybody even thinking along those lines. So it's that short-sightedness. Never mind the racism, but the short-sightedness to make a proper business decision and say, we can create something here. We got Bobby Taylor. We got Jason at Epics. We got Soul Unlimited, Night Train Review. We can do something with this. And they chose not to do this. This
Isn't
was
that weird?
A conscious decision to literally wipe out a cultural chunk of what Vancouver's future would be off the map.
It would be. It would be off the map. Right now, I'd probably own a few homes in West Vancouver.
And you would have deserved it because you did the credit. I mean, you did the work. You do the work, you get the credit. As simple as that.
I think there was a few times in your career that you could have broken bigger. And those that know a little bit about Jason's career will know about that he made the 1975 Mushroom Records album. And although we just played A Baby I Love You from 68 with his second band, the first band was the Epics, the second band here locally in Vancouver was The Trials of Jason Hoover. And then after that all broke up in the early 70s, finally Jason did a few late night hours at Mushroom Studios and came out with this incredible album. And what about this? One of the tracks from your album that we've played, Main Man, one of the best funky tracks. Your what? Relative made a version.
It was a video, yeah. And he used his older nephews. Actually, I'm his uncle. He used his uncle's used his uncle's soundtrack and he made a rap to it.
I think that this record, it does show respect to the original track. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll give the listener an idea of how Jason's music is still marketable today and still fresh today when we hear this collage of Jason's original track and some new rhymes added. And this is called Time to Travel here on African Rhythms using Jason Hoover, Main Man, one of the hottest tracks on his Mushroom album, and there are many. Made locally here in Vancouver using Jason's original track, RC the Hazard, Trying to Travel.
RC Hazard, that's his name.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Ryan Cole Hoover.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think it might not be the last time that Jason's music gets sampled.
That
you
was
know?
Clean and it was quick and it was nasty. He hit the right beat on there.
That's right.
You got to remember the time when he's doing this. This is 75. Mm-hmm. But Main Man could have well have been sampled by Barabbas, which was a Spanish R&B funk band that was based out of Spain in the 70s. And that's that Steve Miller Fly Like an Eagle groove there as well.
Steve Miller was my favorite.
All that is woven in there and whatnot. And he picked the right rhyme and the right time.
That shit was nasty.
Yeah.
I really loved it.
Yeah, did you like that, Kirk?
That was a very nice, you know,
I think we'll have to use a bit of that in the film just to show the contemporary angle.
I think that's a great way to showcase his music with some of the modern stuff and show how it's still pretty current. You
know? Yeah. Exactly. No, I was blown away. And thanks to Carrie, is that her name?
Yeah, Carrie. Sweet yeah. Carrie, my stepdaughter. Yeah,
She's the one that made me aware of it. I didn't actually know.
No, it really was sweet because we've been talking about trying to make connections all along. We talk about we talked often as to how Show Me Some Slack sounded very much like something that Outkast made, so fresh, so clean. Mm-hmm. That hook was similar to that. But here's something that's direct, and and we just fast-forwarded 45, 50 years with this groove off that one song.
Wow. You know,
that's no accident.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is, you know, that's 44 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. It's quite some time.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well, I can't wait to put all the music into the film, Kirk. You know, like, because I think that the comments are going to be deft and interesting, but the music's going to really bounce the whole film.
You got that right.
That's the important thing, is that the music will be the icing on the cake, shall we say, Kirk?
Oh, absolutely. And music's really what makes it, right? And,
yeah. Music is Jason's story, but, you know, there's drama there. Hey, Jason.
Oh, we can go down. We can get down in the drama. You know, it's just the way it is. You know, I think about the Elvis Presley story, and a lot of times I can relate to it in my own career. I mean, I'm not Elvis, but I'm saying I was representing something that was fresh and unique, okay?
Yeah.
Being one of the only one that I really know that actually was black in Canada that actually released 9 singles and a couple of albums, you know?
Well, if you look at all of your singles, I mean, there's Mushroom, there's 5 alone. So Trials, there's at least, and then just on your own name, I'd say there's at least another 8, 9. Yeah, yeah, no,
you're 9.
No, there's more. There's more than 9. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I just recorded my ass off.
Well, I mean, okay, Mushroom alone, there's one Mushroom single that's not on the album, I believe. And then there was 4 other ones.
That's
so,
right.
You know, so there was Love Will Get You.
Yeah.
And then there was, there was She's My Lady. That
the
was
album.
The second one. And then the third single, the third single would be
We Are All People. No,
no,
no, no, no. You're talking about the album.
Hypnotized.
You're talking about Mushroom. It would have to be
Hypnotized.
Hypnotized and Sing With Soul.
Riding High. Yeah. No, Sing Me Some Soul wasn't. Oh no, Sing Me Some Soul was the B side of Love Will Get You, the first single. Yeah. So.
And it was on the album.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But, you know, there's more than 10 singles in your career. I would say so, yeah. Because the Mushroom album, let's just have a little check here. There's Everything's All Right, which was New Syndrome, but it was just you and it wasn't the Trials. Mm-hmm. Then there was Level Get You, She's My Lady, Riding High, and then Free the People Holding Out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was on its own.
And you know what? I don't have that one.
You don't have it on Cap Records?
No, that's not on Cap.
No,
that's
it's
the
on,
fourth Mushroom
Warner.
Single. No, that's the fourth Mushroom single.
Okay.
Free the People.
All right.
Yeah.
I can't remember the label.
Yeah. No, the We Are All People. So, okay, so there's 4 singles on Mushroom, and then We Are All People on Cap. So that's 5 singles. And the Trials singles, that's a few more. Yeah. That's let's have a little look here. Trials of Jason Hoover. So we've got Rust to Dust, Rhythm Is the Way, Freedom Train, We Are All People, on Cap.
We Were Happy.
So some of them are under Anvil Chorus.
That's right.
So there's Rust to Dust, there's Ride Captain Ride, and there's Words. So basically there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... And then 5, there's at least 12 singles you put out in Vancouver.
Okay, yeah. How many do you have in a kitty?
I have
a 60-minute man.
David's got it all now, but 60-minute man is one, and Brown Skin Love is 2. Mm-hmm. I got about four or five. I can't even remember them right now. But yeah, David has all the soundtracks now. The ones that are finished.
Yeah, everything's all right. Is the A side of 60 Minute Man. Yeah. So that's another one. But yeah, the unreleased ones are like Bobby Scott,
Captain Bobby Stout.
Yeah. Sorry, and then there's
Midnight Train.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's still a couple of others.
That's another album. Yeah.
There's all kinds.
That's another album.
Well, we've got enough for the Crux.
If you think about the Crux, the Mushroom, and this the tunes that I haven't recorded, like Brown Skin Lover, haven't been released, Brown Skin Lover.
Please remind everybody what the Crux, what was the subject behind the Crux?
God.
The Crux was the Trials of Jason Hoover album. That was his second band. Mm-hmm. And he'd written a lot of the material, some of it with Kenny Wayne. Mm-hmm. And that was back in 68 through till about 70.
We are all people. We had an album that was never released. It was actually all done up, ready to go, to be pressed.
Yeah. It was announced in an article that we have that we're about to release the Crux album. Yeah, so it's in an article. All right, well, let's listen to one of our favorites for a sec. Let's take a break. And Bobby Womack
is one of our favorites.
Mm. So, Daylight. And I'm going to send this out to my brother, my good friend Carl that passed away this year, Carl Stahl. And he introduced me to the original version of this. Check this out, Mike, by Georgie Fame.
Okay. George
and,
Fame.
Wow. Which blew my mind. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, here is someone, you know, in this town turning me onto records like that. You know, I've been playing him something as heavy as Bobby Womack Taylor. And he's like, just a minute. Here's the original version. But you know what? Right. Bobby's I still prefer, but I have to say I never thought I'd be into Georgie Fame, but it gives him some credence all that he did a track this on.
But anyway, let
Bobby talk.
Yeah. Well, look like I'm going again now. I can't seem to believe myself. Here I go again. Here I go again. Here I go again. Listen to me now. It's 5 o'clock a.m. But the party is still going strong. There's a conversation over in the corner. Beer cans all on the lawn. And the music is grooving. Folks getting down in their stocking feet. Sleepy eyes are peeping from the window across the street, and it looks like daylight. Come catch me up again.
Come catch me up. Come catch me up. Come catch me up again.
Most people are getting up when I'm just getting. I would give up the nightlife and start playing, but it ain't easy, no, no, saying no to my friends, cause the real set don't get started till everyone else is in, and it looks like daylight.
Again.
Most people are getting up when I'm just getting in.
Won't catch me up.
It's the only time when I can unwind.
Daylight.
Gonna catch me up again.
Daylight. Gonna catch me up again.
I believe.
Catch me up again.
I swore to myself time and time again that I would give up the nightlife and start
again.
But I guess daylight's
gonna
me up, gonna catch me up again.
Truly one of the greatest soul songs I've ever heard, Mike. Yeah, I mean, Bobby at the peak of his skills, shall we say.
Ain't no doubt. I mean, it's a song that you can hear it and say, yeah, that's him.
You know, I picture Bobby appreciating a tastemaker like Georgie Fame. Because, I mean, although, you know, he was a UK white singer who was doing R&B, the guy had some class, you know, some taste.
Look, we keep forgetting. You know, a lot of times it's about keeping shit simple. There's only but so many spaces and so many lines on a sheet of music. So obviously the same minds, if they're in that place, are going to transmute their feelings in a similar fashion. That's why oftentimes when we hear two or three versions of a really good song, it always comes out as good no matter who's singing it.
Yeah, whereas when you have something as badass, because let's face it, Little Richard was pretty ripping badass, but to try to cover a track like Tutti Frutti and then have a revoltingly bad version by someone like Pat Boone, but yet, sadly, because he was white, it sold a bunch of copies.
It was an aberration, no doubt, and it was one of the first cases of appropriation. Obviously, it wasn't going to be the last, but what annoyed me about hearing that particular video the first time, it was from a Canadian feed, and they were talking about the song as if Pat Boone had invented the song. This is a great hit on Canadian television. Pat Boone with Tutti Frutti. And I'm like, no.
No, I think that that's a contrast. And then when you take the contrast of Bobby Womack taking like a country song or a white singer song or a pop song, and he takes it to another place, you know. He actually says, hey, I'm just going to get my soul into this song. And listen to the arrangement. It's unbelievable.
And the arrangement's the key, because he left a nice path for anybody else to do that song. Vicky Sue Robinson tried that song in her disco days after Turn the Beat Around, and she ruined it.
Right.
She tried to turn it into a dance tune. There was nothing wrong with the song. Leave it alone. If you're going to sing it with the original arrangement in mind. Right.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Okay.
Because, you know, you look at Jimi Hendrix's version of Along the Watchtower versus Bob Dylan's version of it.
Yep.
And I think they're both really good versions of the same song.
I don't disagree. I'm with you on that. You can do several versions of a good song, but it's all about your approach to it. You can't hide love is probably the perfect example of that.
Earth, Wind & Fire
did it. Carmen McRae did it. Najee did an instrumental version of it. Art Webb did an instrumental version of it. Creative Source, who was the original group, did it. And they all were great versions of the song.
Exactly. No, I mean, it can go both ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, both can be good. I think that just true realization is where it's at. It's true, though, that you can't put the blindfold over to your eyes to see, especially in the early 60s, how they were having trouble until the massiveness of Motown breaking through, breaking black music. But after Motown, what happened after Atlantic, what happened with Aretha Atlantic, things were different. You know,
people translating their own ideas, because Motown, the music itself was mid-tempo. It was designed to be harmless. You know, it was this light. You know, even the love songs were like, you know, oh, yes, darling, you know. And
no solos.
It didn't get into, oh, baby, take them drawers off. I'm getting some tonight. You know, it wasn't nothing like that. You know, and the Memphis sound translated
Stacks.
To that.
That's
Stacks
right.
translated that. Philadelphia International later cleaned it up and made it, you know,
Sweet.
Beautiful and flowery and whatnot. Yeah. But no, Motown was popular because it didn't offend.
Mm.
And, of course, it wasn't the raw gut bucket stuff. Even certain acts in Motown couldn't do what they wanted to do. Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, they were tied down seriously because of the power of voice.
Well, think about this one fact about Motown.
Barry Gordy.
Up until the late 60s, early 70s, maybe the odd Temptation song, there was literally no solo, instrumental solo of any kind.
Thank you.
You know, like, basically, you were not featured if you were the guitar player, bass player, or whatever, right, Jason?
Shotgun.
Except
they got hip to it.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
they finally broke
they
it loose. You know,
but
he was the greatest.
Yeah, but see, the shotgun's mid-tempo, right? Shotgun's mid-tempo. You can dance to Shotgun.
Oh,
but it's like,
man,
ain't nothing fired up about it. No. You know, Martha and the Vandellas were doing stuff like
Live Wire, which was different from Quicksand, and that was jump tempo gospel. Really was what it was.
That's all it was.
They weren't going to play that stuff on the radio, even though it was a Motown act.
Well, I think that the majority of the Motown hits were largely vocal, and there wasn't very much instrumental. Junior Walker, you are correct, the exception to the rule.
He was.
But let's go back to the Mushroom album, and let's look at the second single. Now, She's My Lady, which Sydney and Harrison... down in Los Angeles there and helping us with our film are big fans of. But yeah, let's face it, it reaches a place for a local record maker. I mean, here is, okay, your producer, Mike Flicker. Okay, he's marketing a black artist across Canada or here in 1975. I suppose the She's My Lady kind of an angle would be what they would hope they could market in Canada.
They tried to market it right across North America. I knew nothing about it, of course, except when I went to Los Angeles and just to visit my relatives and Donnie. There it was, right there on Jump Street, in the warehouse, the music warehouse, the album, the Mushroom album.
But here is the key, though, Jason, is that although those copies came down to L.A. and were in the Tower Records, clearly from your own personal archives, you can see that Shelley Siegel and Mike Flicker cut a deal with Island Records, and guess whose name was not on the deal?
Wow. Yeah, it was supposed to be, but I knew that they knew I was getting hip, especially busting him down on Tower Music.
Yeah, basically you were starting to. Yeah, fall out with them at that point.
It was scaring them.
Yeah, like basically your relationship. But let's face it, after your last single came out on Mushroom Records, that would have been. Let's have a look here. 77 was the last single that they put out on Mushroom Records, Free the People, Holding Out, which I've never actually heard because it's an obscure song. Free the People. I've never heard that one.
Oh, yeah, Free the People for the Choir.
So within a year of 1977, Jason, Mushroom Records was finished, gone, and Mike Flicker, his relationship, Mike Flicker, by the way, Hart, Dreamboat Annie was also on the same label, and that record blew up, and that record was sold to a U.S. major label, Island Records, to start with. And Mike Flicker lost his management deal with Hart. So a lot of stuff happened, Jason, towards the end of that Mushroom deal. You know, Mushroom folded, Flicker moved back to L.A., and you were kind of left in the dust a little bit, but you kept touring, and you kept out there, right?
I certainly did. Unfortunately, I still would like to have had more releases. I had written songs now on the road, like up the Yin Yang, and I just wanted to record them and never really got to. It's like I have all these songs that can be recorded, you know, Brown Skin Love and all this stuff. I mean, go on and on. I have to go look at my book to see what the names of the songs are.
Yeah, actually, I have a letter from... Who was the other guy? Gold, Rich, or
Jay Gold?
Jay Gold.
He worked with Mushroom.
He really believed in Jason, and in this letter, he says, "I still hope to break Jason across the rest of Canada," and it was a plan for a tour to go through to Saskatchewan, but then he hoped to extend it to the rest of Canada. And there's talk in this letter to Mushroom Records from this promoter of bringing you into the studio for a second album. So there was talk of it happening, you know, before the label folded. Mm-hmm. You know, so it wasn't your fault, Jason.
Oh, no. Did you ever speak to Wink Vogel? Did you ever get
Not yet. No, we haven't spoke to Wink yet, who's another person who's involved. He's down in Los Angeles. We have spoke to Mike Flicker, the producer, and we're hoping to interview him for the film. So we're putting together this comprehensive history of Jason Hoover. So all the stuff we've been talking about tonight, him starting with the Epics in 64 in this city, and I guess the 64, 65.
Yeah.
Was epic. And then Trials of Jason Hoover from 68 on to 71, 72, and then the Mushroom album in 75. And even in 1986, Kirk, Jason's Mushroom Records was still being celebrated. He was still getting a lot of gigs because he was the headline of Expo 86. Yeah, wow. we have a poster. Wow. which says he's Canada's king of R&B, and he played nightly, and he was the hit of Expo 86. Is that not right, Jason?
Yeah, 5 months, I lost 25 pounds. I worked every day.
Jason, I know I probably didn't ask you this before, but did you ever run into the Wilson sisters?
Yes, I ran into Nancy and Ann all the time. Mm-hmm. I was invited to a party for Heart. They had their second album was being released, mm-hmm. and it was down in Mushroom of all places.
Of course.
And I took my wife there, and we mm-hmm. got there, and we sat around, and we realized there's two rooms. There's one where the coffee and everything served, and people were hanging, mm-hmm. and then there was a run where Heart and I was supposed to be in there. That's my name was up there the day before where I was going to be.
Right.
When I got there, it was only Heart's name, but I went there and knocked on the door and said, oh, let me in, you guys. And they never let me in.
Whoa.
I remember that story.
They never let me in, and not only that, they didn't even answer. Hey, you guys, are you in there?
So that was kind of the beginning of the end for Jason.
I knew, and my wife Sharon said to me, you're done like dinner, honey. She knew I was out the door.
That's fucking
and I had been the figure, I mean, for years before Heart was even thought of. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mushroom Records was me.
That must have really hurt.
And Paul Horn, huh?
That must have really hurt when they did that.
Oh, yeah, it hurt big time. Yeah. But then again, I realized, okay, all right, I want to go big. I want Cap Records. I want whatever. I went down to Los Angeles trying to make a deal. And that was a mistake. You know, you have to do it organized. You can't go down there with your cuts and say, here's Brown Skin Love. I'd like you to listen to this. Oh, that's awfully good. Mm-hmm. What else have you got? Have you got another 30 songs? Well, no, I got about another six.
I don't know, the injustice, because really, that article, Mike, which says how they sold the Heart record to Island mm-hmm. Records, was around that time.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, around the time they stopped inviting him to the VIP room,
mm-hmm.
guess
right.
what they were doing? You know, his promoter was cutting a deal without Jason.
Yeah, no, it's straight skullduggery. And people will just write it off as it being the business, but no. You're taking people's creative license and whatnot, and you've stomped all over it.
It hurt, Mike, because I was the only thing that Aragon, now Mushroom Records, had. Mm-hmm. I was there 3 years. I mean, when you walked into the lobby, my picture was standing there.
Mm-hmm.
A big, huge picture of Jason Hoover. Yep. That was it.
Well, let's listen to this second single now, then. Absolutely. She's My Lady.
Touches me so tenderly. Oh, I'm never, ever gonna mistreat her. I don't wanna do a thing to chase her love away. And she makes it, oh, she makes it so much better. Each and every day. She's my
sexy baby. She's good to me. She's my lady, foxy lady, my pretty baby. She's good to me.
The incredible Ransellum, one of my favorites, with Mizell Brothers production. The same guys, Jason, that did the ABC and I Want You Back production, like Barry Gordy brought them in against Bobby Taylor's wishes, I might add.
Oh, my God. I tell you, Bobby doesn't get enough credit, you know, for his production, for his control.
I mean, those guys are really good production team, those Mizell Brothers.
They're one of the best, come on.
Yeah, I think that Bobby wrote the meat of those songs anyway, like ABC and I Want You Back.
He did.
I mean, for the Mizells to tastefully, that's Capitol Records. So, you know, they were out on the West Coast. And they were part of that. I mean, I guess basically Motown went to L.A., right?
Well, they did because they were running behind the times. They were not as timely as they thought they were, so they moved their whole operation out to California, and that's when the Invictus Hot Wax labels started to form because they were trying to replicate what they did in Detroit with Freda Payne being the Diana Ross and groups like the Chairman of the Board and the Glass House, which had Freda Payne's sister Sherry on it and all that. But they couldn't do it. They had passed all of those things that were relevant to that time period when they were considered the sound of young America had slipped by. And
but
that's why they need
You know what's interesting about that, Rance Allen, is that almost shows you if Motown had been hip enough to get a killer gospel
there
singer like that in with the funk, man, Motown could have been an even hotter label
there
in the mid-70s.
Well, they had one, Martha Reeves, but they didn't want to do it. They didn't know what to do with Martha because her voice was so raw and so gut-bucket.
Oh, powerful.
Yeah, it wasn't like the stuff that you heard at Sax. It wasn't like the Soul Children or Isaac Hayes or anybody out there in that. Motown had a whole different paradigm with that. That's why they were able to be commercially successful. But, you know, the acts that were self-contained, like Gladys Knight and the Pips and Junior Walker and the All-Stars, they couldn't do nothing with them. They had to leave them alone.
Yeah. And then, you know, Gladys Knight apparently was not one to be messed with anyway. Mm-mm. Like she, when they started trying to messing around with her contract. But then Stevie, the same, mm-hmm. he managed to get powerful enough lawyers to... So he didn't get messed with.
That's
you
right.
Know. But I know we've got another little bit of raw funk, though. Another an unknown, Mary Queenie Lyons. But I'm telling you, this is funk 100%.
Okay, maybe not that.
Mary went to the bathroom, y'all. She'll be right back.
There we go.
The only way I can get through the day is to make our life like it was yesterday.
101.9 FM CITR, CITR.ca. Tune in. Ultimate Funk. Wow. Ultimate Funk from Mary Queenie Lyons. I thought I had to drop that one on you, Jason. I'm like, well, and Kirk.
She is funky, and so is her band, man. I haven't heard funk like that for a while.
You can tell the musicians were digging up because gave it full tilt, and she was giving it right back to them.
Yeah.
And the drummer and the bass player were having sex. Yes. They were so, they were having sex, man. They were at it together. It was really neat.
All right, well, I guess I'm going to have to do an ultimate last half an hour. So let's step up the tempo and get into some Northern Soul. And why don't we start with somebody we never played on the show, Mike, but Little Anthony himself.
And the Imperials. Little Anthony and the Imperials. Yeah,
has got some Northern Soul for us.
Go ahead with your bad self, David.
We got a chord problem here. But no, we're back, and we're fixing you good with the Northern Soul, because that's Little Anthony.
That's amazing. His voice has lasted so long, and he has such a fantastic instrument. And you said that was middle 60s, but a lot of people forget Little Anthony and the Imperials didn't stop singing in the early 70s. They had songs like Don't Get Close and World of Darkness.
That was 66, actually.
He suffered one thing that Jason didn't. They couldn't funk. Look at that. When you look at Jason's career, he's done all of that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't.
He did the ballads.
Yeah, he did the ballads and all that, but you can't equate Little Anthony and the Imperials with funk. No way.
Yeah.
You know, not even so. I mean, that was a nice tone.
That was a good stomper.
Yeah, it was a good stomper.
No, I'm glad to know about that.
Definitely filled the dance floor, but I mean, like. We're talking two different animals here.
But you know what that is, Mike? That is basically a reaction to the Motown. Other people are trying to pop off with that same 4/4. Mm-hmm. But let's, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, let's check out a little Motown, or let's check out, a little Motown Northern Soul action from her.
Mm-hmm. I worked with her, man. I opened for her. It's really something else. Martha has a voice that just
you've been in love too long.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, that was, it's a great track, but slightly overlooked compared to Dancing in the Streets and Heatwave. And
I can tell you, we heard this on WWRL 1600 in New York. So again, this was a program director's
choice. Hipper radio.
Yeah. But Motown was like that.
Yeah.
Motown had become so big that they were able to decide which Motown songs they would play based on market. So certain artists weren't going to get played, say, in Chicago, but they maybe would get played down south or something like that because their voices would be considered, like the Contours.
Oh, that's
a perfect example.
Great, man.
Dennis Edwards' voice, you know.
But that was Motown, the 60s, man.
Motown
Contours
wasn't trying to promote that.
60s, you know, they were going. You're talking late 60s, Contours.
That's right.
Yeah. But it set early 60s, too.
Yeah. But it set the table for what they were going to do because they wanted to decide, because we were talking about this in the car. Yeah. Remember the album cover to Smokey and the Miracles, Mickey's Monkey?
Oh,
you know,
man.
It wasn't their picture. No. Yeah. It was some stupid monkey cartoon or whatever.
They were afraid to put black people on the cover of albums in 63, 64.
They touched on that briefly in the movie The Five Heartbeats, but that
this
was
slightly
idea.
Before the civil rights, you know? So, I mean, the reality is, you go to Seattle in 1965, and there was black and white washrooms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that's how close the more radical American racism was than Canada.
Wow.
You know, whatever you have to say about how subtle it is here or whatever, I mean, we didn't have black and white restaurants, washrooms, theaters even, you know.
Yes.
I mean, heavy shit.
Seattle, Washington is way above the Mason-Dixon line. I got to tell
you. And we just finished our gig in the white, I forget the name of the part of Seattle that we played. We went to the restaurant, and they wouldn't serve us. I mean, we let us sit there.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
This was in Seattle?
Oh, this is in Seattle, man.
Holy
because we had a mixed group. Mm-hmm. We had Gerard, myself, my brother.
So this would be the trials, the later incantation.
The late trials. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we've got another Northern Soul. Now, this would have been like the Little Anthony, which was on United Artists.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have Doris Troy, and I'll Do Anything for You. And this certainly sounds a lot like Motown.
Just to be near me, that would be busy in search of one day.
The Velvelettes on Motown and first Doris Troy. So we're stomping with the Motown, Mike.
This would definitely be stuff that you'd hear on a weekender, no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, credit to the British, who since the 70s or even late 60s, they started digging deeper, finding Motown sound-alike, which is what became Northern Soul, mm-hmm. and even Motown tracks themselves become Northern Soul anthems. But some of the biggest Northern Soul anthems on Motown would be unknowns like these things,
that's
the Velvelettes.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And you, like you said, you have to give the Brits credit for this because they not only kept this music alive, a lot of artists that wouldn't have gotten any play at all in the States, just like the jazz musicians in the 50s, they were able to go across the water, be appreciated, and earn a living. You know, that's no mean feat given how music is compartmentalized today.
These artists would be getting gigs, and let's face it, largely the Velvelettes were overlooked. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were not a band that was getting the love. But another artist that Mike and I, we played a lot when we played here on CITR back in the 90s, was the Barrel House incredible voice of Linda Jones.
And Linda
the greatest point to make about Linda Jones, and we're going to listen to this Northern Soul track of hers from 66 called You Hit Me Like TNT.
Oh, but I heard
the most amazing point to make about Linda Jones is very rarely ever have I heard Aretha Franklin praise other people's talent. Mm-hmm. But Aretha Franklin herself had to say, Linda Jones is the shit.
That's right.
She was the beginning of it all, man. Yeah.
Linda Jones performed at the Apollo. Unfortunately, she also died there between sets when she was doing Sunday matinee. Yeah. But Linda Jones could kill it. Yeah. Everybody loved Linda Jones. Yeah. She's a singer-singer, to the point that Aretha just made.
Yeah, she was.
Credit to the Northern Soul guys for recognizing Linda Jones' killer up-tempo tracks, and this is one of the most sought after. She gets a little swoop in right at the end there.
She's just teasing us with that. That's a nuclear weapon of a voice, Linda Jones.
Oh, Linda Jones is too.
Oh, man. I just love right now to be dancing to that on a dance floor somewhere at 5 in the morning. You know? That would just be so epic because Linda Jones is exciting. But I've got a special goodie, Mike, that you've never heard before.
Uh-oh.
And this is Mel Britt, and She'll Come Running Back. Now, this is some of the other stuff I've got to play tonight, I'm honored to have originals by this one. Check this out. I'd have to part if I could even come up with a copy or even anybody would allow me to buy it. But we're talking $5,000.
Get out of here.
So this copy I've got is an unofficial, shall we say. But, you know, just for the joy of being able to hear it, because this is just one spellbinding, unbelievable Northern Soul track.
All right.
Okay, let's read a little bit about his life. So Mel Britz died in Michigan in 2013. Mm. And he was born in Indiana in 45. What else do they have to say about him here? Graduated in 64, served in the Army, moved to California to pursue a career in the music industry.
Hmm.
He toured with Junior Walker and Diana Ross and appeared on Soul Train.
Mm-hmm.
He was even in Animal House. But the only things he ever released was this single, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah, and then there's a couple of reissues of it, but he just had the one single. And let's have a little look of it up here online. Let's see.
5 G's.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to set you back. On average, it's gone for $3,000. But yeah, there's no copies available online at all of any kind. Yeah. You cannot just go and buy this one. You can buy the unofficial version that I have. But, you know, that is a legendary. So what a singer.
That was amazing.
And, you know, he never got to sing again. You know,
wow,
I mean,
how frustrating.
Yeah, you know, so I mean,
good. That's the right word too, Jason, because it's a fickle business.
Yeah,
you know, for everybody we get to hear, there's three people or three acts that, you know, would probably blow them away.
Yeah, you know, I mean, credit to the British to find stuff that's that good, And it all started with apparently this guy, Martin Koppel. He has Cops Records in Toronto, still going. And he went down to Detroit. And him and this guy from England, Tim Brown, this mad collector, they found this basement full of records. And that's where it all started with Northern Soul. They started finding the Motown sound-alike rhythms, and that's what became Northern Soul. I mean, if you listen to some of these other ones tonight, the Doris Troy or the Little Anthony, it's got this stomping dance thing, and clearly it's trying to compete with Motown.
You know, from a cultural standpoint, Motown did leave a blueprint for the world in terms of style and all of that, but, you know, there's style and there's uniqueness, and not that we're trying to pat Jason on the back too much, but Jason is unique.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a style of music that, you know, if Canadian soul had been grasped and pushed, you could have had all this good stuff by him and Soul Unlimited and Bobby Taylor and all of this stuff. And that little corner would have been theirs. Because everywhere else, whether it was California, whether it was Philadelphia, New Orleans, Detroit, Chicago, they had a signature sound surrounding certain elements. And the same thing could have happened in Vancouver.
Well, Bobby Taylor helped a lot. Hey, Jason,
Bobby and I were like this. People don't realize how we both, respected each other to the max. And to take over his spot when he left town to go on tour or whatever was really a joy. And also, I was very proud. And I replaced Bobby Taylor. There was nobody could replace Bobby Taylor. I mean, and the crowds kept coming, so that made me feel really great.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to end with I've Been Blessed, Bobby Taylor, because it's almost like a remake of gospel, like we were talking about earlier. I've Been Blessed could have been a gospel. It probably was a gospel song, but don't you think that's one of his stompers?
Well, I like all of Bobby's up-tempo things. The gospel stuff, I'm getting burnt out. I mean, everybody has a gospel album out now.
Yeah. But, I mean, I've Been Blessed from TaylorMade Soul.
Oh, yeah, TaylorMade Soul. It was way before gospel. Yeah. I'm just making a joke there.
For a minute, I thought you didn't like Bobby Taylor. No, just kidding. That's the kind of music we were blessed to have Bobby here, and we were blessed to have Jason here. And this is the local history, and these four gentlemen in this room, me, David Love Jones, Jason Hoover, Kirk Moses, and Michael Ingram, and others, Harrison and Sydney, and an incredible team we put together. But we are going to document this local history, and we are certainly going to mention Bobby because he was part of this. And we're going to feature some of the music you heard tonight of Jason's and much more. And wait till you see him live doing Jimi Hendrix, George Clinton, and Wilson Pickett. Did that blow you away, Kirk?
I was just like captivated by the whole.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you. Wonderful.
I think that's what made me want to do the film when I saw that in local soul funk history that something that good was unknown to people. It wasn't on YouTube. Nobody could have seen it.
Yep.
But wow, when we get into this film and when we get this story together, finished, well, we've pretty much done it. We've just got to edit it.
Wind Cries Mary, you're going to put a little taste of that.
Yeah, we're going to put a little taste of that because the world needs to see Jason Hoover, how eerie it is, how much he sounds like Jimmy.
I didn't do it intentionally about it. I just sang the song.
All right, well, I'm David Love Jones. You've been listening to David, Mike, Kirk, and Jason Hoover, but take it out, my brother Mike.
All right, from Penticton to Pitt Meadows, from Kingsway to Kitsilano. If you want to know where the soul trees grow, the roots of all of this good stuff can be found right here on African Rhythms.
Amen.
Peace and love.
Cloudy skies hung over me all my life. Hear your voice. I used to walk life's college.
There's only one way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle. A tax-deductible receipt. And a super easy process.